Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. NATO expands, CISTO contracts. Chinese hacking of U.S. targets goes private. And getting to yes at the World Trade Organization. First, on NATO and CISTO, CISTO being the Moscow-sponsored Collective Security Treaty Organization. Score one for NATO and take one away from CISTO. Hungary finally withdrew its objections to Sweden's membership in NATO, paving the way for the 32nd member to join. On the other side of the line, Armenia decided to withdraw from Moscow's six-nation CISTO, which was established in 2002. Armenia is upset over Russia's failure to follow through on an arms deal following its refusal to help defend Armenia against Azerbaijan when Azerbaijan took over the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region last year. That leaves only Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan, along with Russia, in that organization. Uzbekistan joined in 2006 but left 6 years later. For Sweden, entry into a military alliance will be a difficult experience, given its 200-year tradition of neutrality. The country will have to overhaul its capacity for resistance, everything from its subway system, which is in the hands of a Hong Kong, read China, company, to its civil defense and fire departments. Warnings from public officials to get prepared for possible Russian invasion have provided a mental shock. As one CNN report points out, for many years, Swedish investors and manufacturers never considered the national security implications when contracting with foreign firms, especially those from China. Sweden's reappraisal of its military capabilities comes amidst alarm bells sounding across NATO about the prospect of war with Russia. Germany's defense minister says his country needs to become, quote, capable of fighting a war. Britain's army head says his countrymen are part of a pre-war generation. And various military and intelligence officials in other NATO countries are offering estimates of how much time it will take before Russia is prepared to invade. NATO's command, meantime, is looking at scenarios for a Russian invasion, not just when, but where and in what manner. All agree that Donald Trump's recent comment that Russia can do, quote, whatever the hell it wants to NATO members that don't pay their bills has become a key reason for the current alarm. Chinese hacking of U.S. targets goes private. The Washington Post acquired a trove of leaked documents that show the Chinese government, in the Post's words, quote, attempting large-scale systematic cyber intrusions against foreign governments, companies, and infrastructure, with hackers of one company claiming to be able to target users of Microsoft, Apple, and Google, unquote. Chinese hacking is by now not news, nor is it news that Chinese hacking operations are active in several countries besides the U.S., including the U.K., Taiwan, and Thailand. What is news is the role of private hacking-for-sale companies, this one based in Shanghai, that compete with one another for government and state corporation contracts. The leaked documents indicate that this particular company probably had ties to China's intelligence services. This is a departure from the past when the hacking was mainly the responsibility of a unit of the People's Liberation Army. Christopher Wray, the FBI director, said recently that hacking operations from China were now directed against the U.S., quote, at a scale greater than we'd seen before, larger than that of every major nation combined. In fact, he said, if you took every single one of the FBI's cyber agents and intelligence analysts and focused them exclusively on the China threat, China's hackers would still outnumber FBI cyber personnel by at least 50 to 1. How he knows the number of Chinese hackers is beyond me. What we do not know is the actual value of all the Chinese hacking and what kinds of hacking operations the U.S. and other governments are engaged in against China. Getting to yes at the World Trade Organization. The World Trade Organization's decision-making process has typically involved wrangling between governments over who gets what. But now we learn that the organization has embraced a new way of doing business, identifying interests and reaching a win-win consensus. As one writer reports, quote, for over a year now, the diplomats responsible for reforming the WTO have been trying out a new way of doing business with remarkable results. Instead of showing up to meetings with their own written proposals and haggling over whose will get adopted, they started by listening to one another's interests and goals. Then they came up with creative ways to achieve those goals and wrote a new set of proposed rules together. The change in process is attributed to a Guatemalan diplomat, Marco Molina, but I suspect that credit is also due the Harvard scholars, Roger Fisher and William Ury, who years ago authored the book Getting to Yes, which some listeners have probably read and perhaps adopted in their own work. That book and the Harvard Negotiation Project from which it sprang has influenced a generation of mediators who propose exactly what the WTO representatives now are practicing, identifying interests and goals and listening to those on the other side rather than making demands. In other news, Vladimir Putin threatens to use nuclear weapons again. In his annual State of the Nation message, February 29, Vladimir Putin threatened to use nuclear weapons if troops from NATO countries become involved in the Ukraine war. They must understand, he said, that we must also have weapons that can hit targets on their territory, warning of tragic consequences if NATO forces were ever deployed to Ukraine. All this really threatens is a conflict with the use of nuclear weapons and the destruction of civilization, he said. Don't they get that? Putin was responding to statements by French President Emmanuel Macron and Estonia's Prime Minister Kaja Kallas about possibly deploying troops in the war, an idea that actually seems to have very few takers. Putin's threats also, and probably not by accident, came a few weeks before an election that will give him another unopposed victory, and as Alexei Navalny's family prepared for his funeral. Those events probably had more to do with his latest nuclear threats than concerns about NATO. The U.S. struggles to work with military governments in West Africa. Military coups in Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali have left U.S. diplomats with bad choices about relations with those governments. In contrast with their neighbors, the three coup regimes have exited ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, tightened their grip on power, and embraced Russia. None of the regimes seems interested in restoring democratic rule, putting them at odds with the ECOWAS members. To the contrary, Burkina Faso and Mali have allowed Russian troops into the country. The U.S. still has about 1,000 soldiers based in Niger, where they run surveillance on terrorist activities. But the Niger government has signed a security agreement with Russia that probably promises more than the U.S. is willing to deliver, namely military equipment and supplies. Thus, the U.S. Africa Command is reportedly looking elsewhere, such as to Ghana, Togo, Benin, and the Ivory Coast for bases for drones. Mexico City is running out of water. CNN reports that this city of about 22 million people is only months away from running out of water. 90% of the city is in severe drought. Climate change, an inefficient pumping system, and lack of storage facilities for poorer people have created this crisis. Mexico City's geography is also a factor. It was built on a high-altitude lake bed, and its underground aquifer is sinking. With the rainy season still 4 months away, residents worry that the taps will run completely dry. Day zero. Some figures on the costs of the Ukraine war. As the war in Ukraine enters its third year, President Volodymyr Zelensky offered a rare figure on his country's war dead, 31,000 soldiers. The figure is less than half the U.S. estimate of 70,000. Estimates of Russian war dead vary widely. British intelligence puts the figure at around 70,000, journalists covering the war say 88,000, and U.S. estimates run at around 300,000 dead and wounded. A Pentagon official adds that the war is costing Russia around $211 billion, to which should be added $1.3 trillion foregone in anticipated economic growth through 2026. So far, it appears that Vladimir Putin is prepared to pay the human and financial costs. Russia can't get a loan from China. Although the Russia-China relationship has been officially categorized as no limits, there are plenty of limits in fact. One of them is on view now, Russia's inability to get a loan from China. Negotiations with Chinese partners have been going on for a long time, says Russia's finance minister. So far, there is no decision. The key stumbling block, apparently, is the risk factor. Chinese banks don't want to get caught up in Western sanctions if they advance loans to Russia. North Korean workers protest work conditions in China. North Korean workers sent abroad, mainly to Russia and China, is one way the regime earns hard currency. But for the workers, conditions are often intolerable. South Korean sources are reporting that North Korean workers sent just across the border to the Chinese city of Dandong stopped work in mid-February in protest of living conditions. This is not the first time such a protest has occurred. Around 2,000 North Korean workers, dispatched by a trade firm under the North's Defense Ministry, occupied a factory in China's Jilin province in January and staged a riot due to overdue wages. What should also be pointed out is that under various United Nations resolutions, North Korean overseas labor is not allowed, since the money earned is believed to help finance its missile program. Then there's work conditions in China, security first. Work conditions for employees of foreign firms in China have become even more difficult with passage of new secrecy laws. In recent times, executives and consultants for those firms have been under the spotlight of China's security services, causing some to close shop and move to another country. Now, so-called work secrets, which cover information leaks that are not state secrets, are potentially regarded as falling within the meaning of espionage. What kinds of information qualify as work secrets is unclear, giving broad authority to the party and the police. How China expects to attract more foreign investment with such arbitrary laws is an obvious question. Japan's ruling party faces an ethics scandal. The ruling Liberal Democratic Party, the LDP, and its leader, Prime Minister Kishida Fumio, are embroiled in a scandal that is keeping the party from pushing through a new budget in parliament. The scandal mainly involves kickbacks to LDP members of the upper house from fundraising events. Kishida seems to be slow-walking an explanation of the scandal, anxious not to let it derail his fiscal year 2024 budget, which includes a major increase in defense spending and earthquake relief. Finally, two updates. First, on the Israel-Hamas ceasefire talks. Talks are supposed to take place in Cairo, but Israel is not attending and the talks are at an impasse. Both sides seem to agree on a 6-week ceasefire, but Israel wants an accounting of the hostages still alive, names and conditions of health. Hamas wants the return of Palestinians to the north and an increase in humanitarian aid to the level it once was, such as 500 trucks a day. Vice President Kamala Harris is demanding an immediate ceasefire. She also said, quote, "The Israeli government must do more to significantly increase the flow of aid to Gaza. No excuses." Still, the Biden administration is not forcing the issue, at least not in public. And second, on Pakistan's post-election misery. Shehbaz Sharif has been re-elected prime minister despite losing a majority in parliament to the popular former prime minister Imran Khan, who is in jail. Sharif actually beat out his brother, Nawaz Sharif, another former prime minister. As I reported a few weeks ago, Sharif's continuation in office is likely to be marred by accusations of election fraud and corruption, as well as by a stagnating economy, ensuring that Khan and his party will have an enduring appeal. Lurking in the background, as usual, is the military, whose tolerance for ineptitude is notorious. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks very much for listening, and take good care.